CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals. Whether you own or run a business or would like to start one, this is the place for all the answers. Now, here's your host, Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind. Welcome to my show. Before we go on, if you want to get to me, it's really easy. Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you can check out my blog postings going back several years. They're instructional. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. You can even check out some job openings that we might have in the United States and once in a while even outside. If you're interested in my political ramblings, just go to nationalfreedomforum.com. Look for the box that says subscribe, same process, follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll get my political blog postings every day. It's my chance to rant and rave about what's going on in the country and the world. And if you're interested in Paragon Home Resources, which is one of our growing businesses, just go to ParagonHomeResources.com, look for the line that says blog, click on it, same process, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and you'll get my home-related blog postings generally every day. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go to TalkZone.com. All of the shows that are hung there in the podcast, and you can take a listen if that's what you want to do. We always start the show with seeing the train coming. And one of the interesting things that's been in the news lately is this notion that college athletes will now be allowed to cash in. Is this good or bad? The Supreme Court apparently has ruled in favor of the athletes who technically, when they sign on to a school, and they get a scholarship and whatever else they're getting from that school as an attraction to come there, they're not allowed, theoretically, as amateurs to cash in on their fame, their success, and on all the monies that these universities in particular are earning from the athletic department. And I have to tell you, folks, these schools, you know, when they talk about the Big Ten or, you know, all these different designations, I'm not really into sports. But they earn billions of dollars from their athletic departments. And I know even years and years ago when I was a student teacher at Kennedy High School in Granada Hills, California, and it was a brand new school. And I actually, the history department chairman was my master teacher. Her name was Estelle Litt. She was great. Anyway, so we wanted to do like a multimedia center or something like that in the school. And she said to me, you know, we can't spend any money until the football lights go in. Remember, it was a brand new school because they needed the football lights in order to have Friday night football for the income that it brought to the school. Now, remember, this was a high school we're talking about, not a college or university. So when you see these big name colleges and, you know, whether it's basketball or football or the various sports that they're into, it's billions and billions of dollars. So now athletes are saying, look, it's not enough that you give me a scholarship. It's not enough that you buy me a car. It's not enough that you feed me and you give me whatever I need, basically. And I don't know whether they get a small allowance or not, to be honest. But I want you to pay me to come to your school. I want a piece of the action, so to speak. And finally, the Supreme Court said, well, they're entrepreneurs. They're free agents. They have a right to negotiate and, in essence, to, I hate to say it, but sell their services to the highest bidder. Now, what that's going to do is the smaller schools can forget about competing because the smaller schools are not going to be able to offer the kind of money, presumably, that the bigger schools can offer. And it isn't just about the money that the schools might pay. Now, all of a sudden, these young kids in universities, you know, they can do endorsements. They can sell T-shirts, you know, jerseys with their names on them. You know, they'll be able to do all of the same things that the athletes, that the professional athletes are doing now. And so all of a sudden, when you talk about hitting the gravy train, you know, for their talents. Now, in fairness, you know, I look at it and I say, well, okay, this is America. I'm a big believer in capitalism. If, in fact, these athletes you know, are producing income for somebody, why shouldn't they get a share of it? Why shouldn't they be paid, you know, in addition to the scholarship monies, in addition to the car that they're sometimes given, in addition to the food that they're given, you know, they get, you know, whatever it takes to support them while they're at the university, provided they're in the athletic program and therefore they're generating money. Now, I will tell you, the big winners in terms of athletics that support everything tend to be basketball and football. The other sports are subsidized by the big sports, basketball and football. So it's highly unlikely that if you play tennis or you're a golfer or what else, a weightlifter or a wrestler or whatever, those sports are not where the big money is. The big money particularly is in football and basketball. And by the way, this will be interesting to see what happens in terms of men versus women, because it's the male dominated sports that drive the income for these universities. So basketball and football are the two big ones. And so the women's sports, presumably, that are under attack, that's a whole nother story, with the notion that transgender men can now compete in women's sports. That's a whole nother ballgame, folks, in terms of what the implications would be to that. You know, there's a little something called Title IX that was put in place years ago to allow women to gain access to competitive sports. And the notion was that women were not getting their fair share of the pie in terms of budgets to, you know, participate in competitive sports, whether in high school, whether in colleges. And Title IX said, well, you can't do that. You have to have equal access to competitive sports. And so now the other little cultural bomb that's going on is this notion that all a man has to do is say he's a woman. And so he can compete. I know we have the first transgender types that are being qualified for the Olympics. We have men that will be competing in women's sports. Now, keep in mind, these are men who would not be able to successfully compete with other men because their athletic prowess is not as good as what would be true for the men competing in those same sports. But when they move over into the women's sports, where they don't have to be quite as good because women, you know, typically don't perform in sports at the same levels of men. But now you put a man who says he's a woman into a woman's competitive environment, and all of a sudden that man becomes very competitive. So here we go. This is going to trickle down. We're going to have a whole discussion about women's sports versus men's sports. The men will no doubt command more money. This is the next little shoe to fall. The men will command more money than the women because the men's sports, basically football and basketball, is where most of the money is in college athletics. The other sports are subsidized. They don't pay for themselves, or at least not to the degree that football and basketball drives everything in the big schools. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see where this all goes. I put it under my Seeing the Train Coming segment because sometimes, you know, when these things come down, we don't necessarily fully understand the implications of some of this stuff until a year or two later, and we start to see more lawsuits. In this case, women suing because they're not able necessarily to get the kind of money that men get. And so they'll claim discrimination, that they're not being paid the same as the men. And the men will argue, or at least their agents, and now we're going to have agents, by the way, there'll be agents negotiating these deals because they want their 10% or whatever agents get paid. And so they're going to be big time agents negotiating these deals. And it's about endorsements. It's about the names on the jerseys. It's about highest and best, you know, offers relative to what the schools are willing to pay. And so what's getting lost in this a little bit is the actual education that the kid is supposed to be getting while he goes to colleges or universities. We're not hearing about that. Now it's going to be about, I can play football. I can help you win football games. I know that that's going to bring money to the university. What are you going to pay me to come there and do it? Forget about the fact that I'm actually coming to a school to actually get a degree. I mean, hello, that's the whole purpose, isn't it? But believe me, that's going to get lost in the translation. And so now We're going to have the whole persona of professional athletics only at the college or university level. And who knows, some of these kids may be paid millions of dollars. We don't know yet. Their education won't be enough. We'll be back with more after this quick break.
Now, back to CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind. Welcome back to my show. I want to talk about travel. Travel is starting to pick up. And so the airlines are kind of, you know, struggling a little bit because to some degree they don't have the staff. American Airlines had to cancel several flights because they just don't have the staff. And so now we're starting to see kind of the summer, for better or worse, call it the summer travel that would be typical, is starting to kick in. But here's the reality. They live off business travel. And the real question is business travel coming back, or will it ever come back to the levels it was at? I was just on a Zoom call, as a matter of fact, just before the show today. And, you know, we spent an hour. And in the old days, I probably would have flown back to New Hampshire where the other guy was, or we would have met somewhere, or he would have come to California maybe, or come to Reno or wherever I was in Texas or someplace, and we would have had a business meeting. Well, now, you know, we were on a Zoom call for an hour. I've had Zoom calls where I had someone from Sweden, one of our employees from France, one of our employees from Dallas, and someone from, Singapore. And we had a perfectly good hour meeting. It was very productive. In the old days, I probably would have jumped on an airplane. I mean, I have 5 million air miles. I don't even know how many hotel rooms I've stayed in my life. But now I don't need to do that anymore. And so the notion of having a meeting, flying somewhere to have a simple meeting, I just think those days are gone. It's just not cost effective. It's not time effective. So the real question, I think, is going to be, are we going to see conventions come back? You know, are there going to be those huge conventions that happen in Las Vegas and other places where, you know, 1,000, 2,000 people, 3,000 people go to a convention? Or are those gone with the wind? I don't know. What I do know is that the whole notion of sales travel is probably not coming back anytime soon, or at least at the levels it was at. You know, we used to be called road warriors. I was in consulting and in sales for years, and I was a road warrior. I was gone 5 days a week most of the time. I was usually home on the weekends, but more often than not, you know, I was probably gone at least 2 weeks a month, sometimes 3 weeks a month on the road, out doing consulting projects or making sales calls or whatever. Now, today, that would all be done on Zoom. I wouldn't have to jump on an airplane. And so the real question, and the reason, by the way, this is important, is because the business traveler is the traveler that pays the highest fares. Because generally, business travel, unless it's a convention, isn't booked weeks or months in advance. You know, if you're doing leisure travel or vacation travel, and you know you're going to have a week off at some point, you will basically, you know, book it. If it's going to be a convention, you have the ability to book it way in advance. But you're not going to do that if you're booking, you have a need because you're going on a sales call or you're going to do a consulting project. You're booking those trips much closer to the dates. And as a result, you're paying the highest fees. Well, the airlines need business travel because business travel is the gravy. Vacation travel is not the gravy because those are the low fares. They need the higher fares, the higher economy fares, because people are booking at the last minute, and that's when you pay the highest fares. And so the real question in terms of the airlines anyway is, where are they going with all of this? Because at the end of the day, there's tremendous capacity available. Obviously, the jets are there. There's a real question as to the pilots and the other staff that they may have laid off that they have to bring back to work. But the real issue is the jets that are sitting there. And then also, when you look at the trickle in terms of a company like Boeing or Airbus that sells the jets, well, why would companies, unless they're getting rid of really old jets that aren't fuel efficient, but why would companies, the airline companies, need to buy more jets when they've got plenty of jets that aren't full, that are just sitting in parking lots somewhere in airports, presumably, without having, passengers. And so I just wonder, when I look at business travel and, and this is totally COVID related, because before COVID, we had pretty good travel budgets that we typically had for my company anyway, and many companies, we had a pretty good line item for travel. Now, frankly, it's down to almost nothing. I mean, our people just don't get on airplanes anymore. And you know what? Here's the good news. When I look at the quality of life issues, and for young people in particular, I'm not so sure most young people today would do the traveling that I did when I was young and I had small children. I think a lot of people would push back on that today. They wouldn't want to be on the road 2 or 3 weeks a month. One of the things that's happening, even with truck drivers, they can't find truck drivers because they don't want to be on the road 3 weeks a month. They don't want to be away from home 3 weeks a month. That's a whole different story in terms of somebody's job. But I think it's true, too, in reference to business travel. So now that everybody has gotten used to Zoom meetings or the Microsoft version of Zoom, there's 2 or 3 ways to do it. It's kind of like, well, why do I need to jump on an airplane at this point when, I just don't need to do it? And so I think at the end of the day, it's going to be, less business travel. It's going to have an immense impact on airliners or airline companies, because they're just not going to see that high value customer as much as they did before. It's not going to happen. And I think at the end of the day, there's going to be a major fallout. Now, what happens when volume goes down? We could start to see more airline mergers. And, who knows? We might see some big mergers in the airline industry. There's usually a trickle effect. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to be very interesting to see where this all goes. And, I know there's going to be less business travel. I feel it in my bones. We'll have to see what happens with conventions and seminars, whether those are going to pick back up again. I tend to think we might see conventions travel again, because I think industries like to get together once a year for, schmoozing and whatever. But I think it's going to be very selective. And even that, I don't think, is going to be quite as extensive as it was in the past. Because if you can meet face-to-face on Zoom, why on earth did there were even Zoom conventions, relative to what was going on. And so I think really, for the airlines purposes, and keep in mind, it isn't just the airlines. Think about it. It's hotels. It's rental car companies. During COVID, the rental car companies sold off their cars because they had no renters. And so now there's a scramble for rental cars, and rental car prices have doubled in terms of what they're charging. What was $35 a day is now $70 a day, because there just aren't enough rental cars to go around. It'll probably take a year or more for the rental car companies to get their inventory back up so that they've got cars that they can rent. So, when you think of the trickle in terms of hotels and restaurants that presumably would have been used by business travelers. So there's a trickle down impact to all of this, but I just don't see business travel coming back in a big way anytime soon. And so there's going to be an impact across industries, hotels, restaurants, rental cars. Think of everything that happens when somebody travels on business that isn't going to happen. Think of the stores that are in these airports that aren't going to have that business traveler buying things in those stores. There is going to be an impact, with a lot of this stuff. And I really think that airlines and all of these different companies that thrive on business travel, they're going to have to adjust and recognize that customer is probably gone with the wind, at least for now. Who knows? Maybe 5 years from now, things will get back to normal. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Whether you're thinking of starting a business or just moving up the corporate ladder, this is the place for practical advice. CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind with the second half of our show. If you want to get to me, it's really easy. Just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions, and you can take a look at my blog postings that are instructional going back years that I think would be helpful. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. You can even take a look at some of the job openings that we might have in the United States and once in a while even outside. If you're interested in my political ramblings or rantings, as the case may be, just go to nationalfreedomforum.com, same process. Look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll get one of my political blog postings every day. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources, one of our growing businesses, just Google ParagonHomeResources.com. Look for the line that says blog, same process. Type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll get my blog postings on Paragon Home Resources every day. If you missed any of my shows, you can go to TalkZone.com and you'll see all of my podcast hung there. And you can catch up if you missed a particular week. Okay, so for this third segment of our show today, I want to talk about government money going based on race or gender is unconstitutional. You know, the Biden administration has attempted to single out winners based on race or gender and basically hand out free money. And so they attempted to forgive loans to black farmers. They've attempted to help small businesses based on race or gender. And what's occurred is that white folks have sued and they've gone to court because under the 14th Amendment and under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, ironically, this is race discrimination in reverse. They've been discriminated against and the courts have ruled in favor of those filing the lawsuits. So if the government is going to provide freebies, so to speak, free money, they can't do it based upon race or gender. Those programs have to be open to everybody so that ultimately there aren't the charges of racial discrimination. In this case, it's reverse discrimination. You know, I keep saying, folks, you can't fight racism with more racism. It just doesn't make any sense. It's what we see happening in our schools today that are attempting to do critical race theory and Project 1619, which, you know, speaks of white privilege and oppression by whites and shaming of white children. It's just crazy to even think in these terms today. And so, you know, when you look at the government handing out free money, in essence, on the basis of race or gender, unfortunately, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, and boy, that document is so important, is colorblind. There's the Equal Protection Clause in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. This was one of the amendments that came after the Civil War. It was designed specifically to protect freed slaves from discrimination and, of course, blacks along the way with Jim Crow laws and all of that. And certainly legitimate, there's no argument that it made perfect sense to do the 14th Amendment. But now what we have is reverse discrimination. And so we have the government picking winners and losers based on gender or race, and the courts are saying you can't do that. Under the 14th Amendment, it's colorblind. It doesn't matter whether the person is black, brown, yellow, blue, green, whatever, but white. You can't discriminate on the basis of color. And so that's exactly, or on the basis of gender, that's exactly what's been going on under the Biden administration. And everything Joe Biden is trying to do by executive order, the courts are striking down because it violates the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution under the Equal Protection Clause. And so I'm thrilled that, you know, the courts are basically standing up for the Constitution, and not because it's an issue about white people being discriminated against. It's about fairness. I mean, what if we were to say that only white farmers would get their loans forgiven? What if that was what was happening? What if Biden had signed an executive order that said only white farmers can get their loans forgiven? Can you even imagine anything so ridiculous? And so obviously you would have people of color suing, saying, wait a minute, you can't do that. That's racial discrimination. Well, yes, it would be. And so we cannot have a situation, you know, I really think we need to get back to Martin Luther King, who really was an American hero. The more I think about this King's wisdom, the more I see and value it. When King said, we have to judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. We have lost that in our country today, because today we're seeing everything through racial glasses, through gender glasses, through, you know, all kinds of craziness that's dividing our country like crazy. And I'm just glad to see the courts are standing up and saying, no, we're not going to do that. It is not going to be permitted. It violates the Constitution of the United States. We aren't going to go down that road. And so at the end of the day, I think it's just wonderful that folks are prevailing in these lawsuits, because what Biden is trying to do is wrong. It's simply wrong. And so they had to pull back. There was that instance of forgiving loans for black farmers, and so they struck that down. The other instance was in reference to small business loans that were supposedly targeted at people of color, but not white people, but people of color, and based on gender, that was stricken down by the courts. And so I would think Biden would get the message that, you know, that little thing called the Constitution matters. The 14th Amendment matters. Gosh, when I think about the wisdom that has gone into our Constitution since the founding of our country, and it is the bedrock of our country, the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of speech, press, and religion, the Second Amendment, which guarantees that we can own guns. You know, when I think about, and all the rest in the Bill of Rights, when I think about the wisdom of our founding fathers. And by the way, the first 12 presidents, no, I shouldn't say that, 12 presidents owned slaves. And by the time Grant became president, he had one slave that he freed. But even Grant owned slaves, ironically. And he was the one that, in essence, helped win the Civil War that eventually, you know, ended slavery. But in any case, I really think at this point, the government really has to be even-handed, cannot discriminate on the basis of race or gender. And really, you know, it doesn't matter whether a person is of color or white. And by the way, white is a color, I think. I think white is a color. I don't know. And frankly, white people really aren't white. I don't know what color white people are. But white people come in all colors, too, from, you know, mixtures of colors. I don't know. But in any case, I think it's really important that the Supreme Court and the lower courts are standing up for the Constitution, are stopping the president from using racism to fight racism. There's something illogical about using racism to fight racism. It makes no sense to me that, you know, we would be doing things today on the basis of race. When Martin Luther King said, we have to judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, did he get that right? My gosh. I mean, his wisdom, when I think back, and right, and so we've gone from that to what we see on our streets, the rioting, the looting, the burning. You know, we see what's happening on our streets, and those are not protests for racial justice, folks. Those are insurrection against our government and burning down buildings and burning down businesses. I'm sorry, I'm not going there with those folks. I'm with the folks that stand up for equality and civil rights and doing what's right by people. That's where we need to be. And we need to treat everybody the same, and everybody needs to get equal justice, and everybody needs to see the same kinds of government advantages, or in this case, disadvantages, as sometimes occurs. And we just cannot have racial discrimination against anybody on the basis of race. And the whole notion of shaming white children in schools, that's ridiculous, you know, or better yet, putting out things that vilify cops. What if a kid in a school's father is a cop and they're going to school to hear the teacher say all cops are murderers? We're seeing that in some cases with some of the stuff that's going on in our public schools. And now you're a kid and your father's a cop. How do you think, I don't care what color, by the way, it could be any color, but how do you think it makes that kid feel when they see their father as a hero saving lives? How does that kid feel when the teacher said, your father says your father, because they speak in generalities. You know, when I was a teacher years ago, we taught not to stereotype, not to generalize, not to say anything about everybody, because anything about everybody does not apply to most people. And so, you know, I really think I'm so pleased that the courts are standing up for equal rights, that they're enforcing the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and addressing the whole notion of equal protection under the law, because at the end of the day, if we don't have the rule of law, if we don't have equal rights, we don't have a country. We don't have a country anymore. We can't live together if we don't recognize equal rights. And this is true in business. It's true in our personal lives. It's certainly true in education and everything we do. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Harnessing the entrepreneurial spirit of America. This is CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind with the fourth segment of our show today. I want to talk about the National Socialist, otherwise known as Democrats, push to expand Medicare. They want to take it down to 55 years old. And I got to tell you, folks, I have a real problem with this, because Medicare and Social Security are both headed toward insolvency today, right now, with the folks that are currently eligible for Medicare. What the Democrats really want is single-payer health care. They want government health care. And keep in mind, even Medicare is not government health care, because most people have overlay insurance with Medicare. They either have Medicare Advantage or they have Medigap policies that they buy from private insurance companies. So Medicare, strictly speaking, is not even single-payer health plan, because very few people today are on straight Medicare. It doesn't cover enough. So what they want to do is take it down to 55. One thing I would agree with that would get things in sync is to allow people to access Medicare at 62 rather than 65, because you can access Social Security benefits at 62. Now, you get a penalty if you take it sooner than your retirement age, but the fact of the matter is, the fact that you can access Social Security at 62 certainly would be logical to allow people at 62 years old to access Medicare, because if you lose your job as you get older, then the notion of having to buy insurance is going to be very expensive. And so it makes perfect sense at 62 years old, since you can already access Social Security, that you would also be able to access Medicare. And I would think that the Republicans probably would buy into that sort of a concept, because it's logical. But everybody needs to understand, Medicare is not free, folks. Even though in your working life you may have paid in your whole life, it's not free. It's means tested. And it goes from a minimum of about $150 or more dollars up to $500 or more dollars, depending on your income, per month, per person. So Medicare ain't free. It's not even free after you retire. You're going to pay for Medicare. And I would assume, to keep Medicare solvent, they're going to have to raise the amount that people pay, because it's probably not going to be enough what's being paid today. They're going to have to raise it up to something even higher. But right now at the top end, it's over $500 a person, depending on your income. And there's like a graduated scale to pay for Medicare Part B and Part D. Part A is hospitalization. That's free. You don't pay for that. And Part C, if you do Part C, that's the Medicare Advantage programs, whether you do an HMO or a PPO. And it tends to replace Part B, which is basically Medicare with Medigap. And you buy a policy that probably costs $200, $250 a month if you buy Medigap insurance. But anyway, the Democrats are trying to expand Medicare down to 55. That will go nowhere, because there's no way Republicans will vote to support that. I think they could get it to age 62, because there is logic to doing that. But at the end of the day, everybody needs to understand, and we don't hear this enough, that Medicare is means tested, meaning it is not free. And it's not free no matter what your income is, unless you qualify for Medicaid. And if you qualify for Medicaid because your income is so low, then it may be you're not paying the $150 a month. I really don't know how that works, to be honest. But if you qualify for Medicaid, then probably you don't have to pay that $150 a month, which I think is about the bare minimum, depending on your income. They take it right out of your Social Security, whatever it is you're paying. So whether you're paying the $150 a month or you're paying the $500 a month, depending on your income, it comes right out of your Social Security benefit. And that's another reason why allowing for it at age 62 could make sense, because whatever you would have to pay would come right out of your monthly Social Security. It's not a good idea, by the way, to take Social Security at 62, because you're going to have a huge penalty. Right now, the full retirement age for Social Security, I think, is around 67 years old, depending on when you were born. So in order for you to get 100% of your Social Security, what's called your full retirement age, depending on where when you were born, I think for me, it was 66 and a half or something like that before I could take Social Security at my full benefit without any penalties. And getting it at your full benefit means that you can work and still get Social Security. If you take Social Security before you're eligible and you're still working, they will deduct the money from your Social Security. You can only make so much a year. And then, you know, for every dollar you make, they take 50 cents away or some crazy rules. So you really almost have to wait until your full retirement age. Nevertheless, there are some people that do end up taking Social Security at 62. And if you do that, you're going to get probably about 60% of what you would get at your full retirement age. But if you need the money, you take it sooner. So it does make sense to expand Medicare to coincide with the earliest time that you could get Social Security, which would be at 62 years old, even though there's going to be a penalty. It would make sense to do that. But at the same time, I think, you know, the notion of the Democrats pushing to expand Medicare down to 55 years old. Now, what they're saying is they would allow people to buy into Medicare. Well, who knows what that would cost? It wouldn't be free. It's not free now. So whether that would be affordable, and certainly if somebody has company medical insurance where the company is paying 70 to 80% of the premium, then obviously that person's not going to buy into Medicare because it would cost them more than what it costs in order for them to have health insurance through their company. So that isn't going to happen for those people. This would be people without insurance. But I thought Obamacare was supposed to solve that problem. So theoretically, people that are 55 years old that don't have medical insurance through their companies, they can buy insurance through Obamacare, and it can be highly subsidized depending on their income. So I don't really understand what the Democrats are trying to do, except that they really want to, as much as possible, destroy the insurance system. But it doesn't do it anyway, because most people on Medicare either have Medigap insurance through insurance companies, or like me, I have Medicare Advantage PPO through a major insurance company. So, and you know, it's like having private insurance, even though theoretically, I guess it's subsidized by Medicare. I do pay Medicare. I don't pay a premium, but I do pay for Medicare. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I have private insurance under the Medicare plan. I'm not on straight Medicare. I have regular private insurance that covers me no different than if I were working for a company. So I don't know what the Democrats are trying to do, but they're trying to pass a $6 trillion budget, folks. The country takes in about $4 trillion a year in revenue, and they want a $6 trillion budget. We are very close to $30 trillion in national debt. They're projecting that in the next 10 years, we'll be at $39 trillion in national debt. This is impossible. We just can't continue down this road. It's just impossible. So adding more entitlements, frankly, is insane. It's insane what they're trying to do. The money's not there to pay for all of this. It's just not there. If they were to tax everybody at 100%, you couldn't pay for all of it. So, you know, something's got to give here, folks. And clearly, the notion of taking Medicare down as far as they're taking it is just not conceivable. The Republicans will vote against it. It isn't going to happen. It will not pass a filibuster. They're going to try and do it through the reconciliation process so that they don't need Republican votes. This is insane. This is plainly insane. what the Democrats are attempting to do. They're bankrupting our country. It's not good for anybody. Our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren will end up having to deal with this debt. It could lead to the dissolution of the United States. You know, the Soviet Union did not fall apart because they were militarily weak. The Soviet Union fell apart because their economics were unsustainable. And we're headed in the same direction as we have Democrats pushing for socialism and even communism. This makes no sense. It's never worked anywhere in the world that it's been tried. And so we have to push back. I'm so pleased to see the silent majority is silent no more. People are showing up at school board meetings. They're showing up at city council meetings. They're showing up at their state capitals. They're showing up in Washington. And they're saying, no, we don't want this. No, 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 no. And so I think we're going to have more activism from patriotic Americans who are willing to stand up and say to these politicians, we don't want what you're selling. We're certainly seeing in the school districts that are trying to push through social justice curriculum that is really critical race theory and 1619 Project, socialist, Marxist, fake revisionist history. And so people are showing up at these school board meetings. There was a 9-year-old little girl who showed up at a school board meeting to protest what was happening in her classroom. Unbelievable. And so, you know, this is another example. We should be saying to our elected representatives, look, you're bankrupting the country. You have to stop creating entitlements that we can't pay for. Medicare for all, so to speak, down to 55 years old, is absurd when we have Medicare headed toward insolvency today with Medicare at 65 years old. So it's not workable. It can't work. It's not going to work. Fortunately, Republicans will vote no. It will go nowhere. But just know they're pushing it. They are pushing it. The Democrats are trying to get in everything they can because they know they're probably going to lose the Congress in 22 and the Biden presidency effectively will be over. And so they're trying to push through everything in the kitchen sink. And fortunately, the Republicans in the Senate still have the filibuster and they're able to stop many things by just not giving them the 60 votes that they need to bring something to a vote. This one, however, they're going to try and push through in reconciliation and part of a $6 trillion budget. I mean, it's just unbelievable what the Democrats are trying to do. They are literally bankrupting our country, and they don't care. That's the part that I don't understand. They don't care. They don't care that ultimately we're going to have a $30 trillion national debt or going to $40 trillion national debt. There isn't enough wealth in the entire country to pay for this. If they took everything from everybody, you couldn't pay for what they're doing. So clearly, this is not good. And when you hear them talking about taking Medicare down to 55, if you happen to be 55, just understand it's not going to be free. You're going to have to pay for it one way or another. And they're going to take it out of your salary like they would anything else. And so, you know, expect it to be very, very expensive. I don't know why you would need it anyway, because if you don't have health insurance, you could go and buy Obamacare. The Supreme Court upheld Obamacare. It's not going away. So I don't really understand what the Democrats are attempting here. There's no need to do what they're trying to do. I don't get it. And so, you know, I think everybody out there just needs to be very careful. Unfortunately, what happens in Washington does not stay in Washington. And so you kind of have to watch C-SPAN, which frankly drives me crazy because when I see, you know, all the waste, fraud, and abuse in action and all the players feeding at the trough, it drives me a little crazy, to be honest. But it's happening. This is another one of those deals where they're trying to expand Medicare. I don't know how it's feasible. I don't know how it can be done, frankly, because the country is already headed toward bankruptcy. We're out of time, folks, so just join us next week for more CEO Business Mind.